The war concluded, and it raged on inconclusively for a number of years with just some petty raiding in the area of Corinth. It was not vigorously prosecuted for the most part. It was brought to a conclusion in 387 and 386 BC. And the conclusion of the Corinthian War in the so-called Peace of Antalcidas, named for the ambassador who negotiated the peace, is extremely telling because Antalcidas negotiated this peace on behalf of the king of Persia. This is a common peace treaty. That is to say, it is not just a peace treaty between two Greek states, but a peace treaty that is open to any Greek state which wishes to sign on, but it is being brokered by the Persian king. Now, what I think this suggests to us is that early on in the 4th century, the affairs of the Greeks have reached a point where there is such general equality between the different states of Greece that no single state will be able to impose its will on the affairs of the Greeks. And the second point that this makes most importantly is that from now on, the king of Persia is going to be an active participant in the affairs of the Greek states. The line between national and international has now been wiped out. We'll talk a little bit more about the effects of the king's peace and the other examples of common peace treaties that we find in the 4th century in a moment. But first we should note that this common peace treaty, which was supposed to end all the wars in Greece and create stability in Greece, was really used by the Spartans as an opportunity to simply reassert their authority in the Peloponnese. So this treaty was meant to guarantee the autonomy of all of the separate Greek states, but it was used by the Spartans. So we find, for example, in 385, 2 years after the peace had been signed, the Spartans forced the people of Mantinea to tear down their walls and to disperse from their city into five separate villages. Mantinea lay north of Sparta, and this was seen as a potential threat to the Spartans. So they were imposing their will on another sovereign Greek territory. In 383, 2 years after that, the Spartans once again presented an ultimatum to a small Peloponnesian community, that of Phlius. And here the Phliasians were forced to take back exiles who had been kicked out some years earlier. These exiles were, of course, pro-Spartan in their leanings. So the Spartans proved to be both an unpopular power around Greece in general, and even after the common peace, to be extremely high-handed in their treatment of the Greeks, particularly close to their borders. This period of Spartan hegemony reaches its culmination with two quite astonishing events which take place in the 370s. In 382, a Spartan army marching through central Greece had, for no good reason and under no provocation, attacked Thebes and seized the citadel of Thebes. It remained there, occupying that citadel for the next 3 years until it was expelled in 379. This was the most high-handed of all of their actions in the 380s. Then in the 370s, these two events take place, as I've said, which really mark a turning in the affairs of the Greeks, and particularly the position of Sparta. In 379-8, the Athenians issue a call to all of their current and former allies to resuscitate the Delian League, the empire which had existed in the 5th century and which had been disbanded at the end of the Peloponnesian War. And very quickly, virtually overnight in the 370s, from about 379 down to the late 370s, the Athenians were able to register all of their old allies. And so once again were able to claim that they were the centre of a naval empire, embracing both the Aegean and even other parts of Greece as well. So they quickly reasserted themselves. This did not happen overnight, as sometimes it's been suspected. We, in fact, know of treaties in the 380s that are bilateral treaties between Athens and separate states, an alliance with Byzantium, an alliance with the island of Chios. So very carefully, in the 380s, while Sparta is manipulating affairs in the Peloponnese and is outraging the rest of the Greeks, the Athenians are very delicately forming a series of alliances with individual states. And then in 379, having made many of these alliances, they then approach all of their allies and say, let's reform the Delian League. This time, we'll do it without tribute. This time we will do it without clerics. This time we will do it without garrisons being imposed. In other words, we will create a better, more perfect version of the Delian League. And that was clearly something that was because of and a response to the growth of Spartan power and the manipulation of the affairs of the Greeks by Sparta in the 380s